I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
My dog shits cash, part 7. We're not in Kansas anymore. How many reasons were there in the end? Nathan asked himself. Did I have enough? What was the right amount? Did I have too many reasons? Did I have the right reasons or the wrong ones? His voice wasn't there, not really. But he was still talking to Duke, the Great Dane who could travel through dreams and apparently into wherever Nathan currently found himself. The astral plane, limbo, heaven, somewhere else entirely. There was only nothing. No here and no there. Duke stood at the edge of nothing and looked at the horizon of nothing and sniffed some nothing on the floor before looking to Nathan, who was also nothing now. Nathan always told Winnie that he would make something of himself, and now look at him. He'd made nothing of himself. What the hell are you looking for? Nathan said, without air or lips or a tongue. Duke looked at Nathan for a moment but quickly returned to his search. The sound of his heavy sniffing was the loudest thing in the, not room, but whatever this place was. Is this everything you thought it would be? Did you ever think you would actually do it? Nathan looked around the nothing without his eyes and saw nothing, only Duke, who was picking up speed now, on a trail that led him left to right, right to left, his nose working overtime. Duke, you've just got to let me be alone for a while, yeah? I'm dead now, I think. I'm pretty sure that I'm dead, so you probably shouldn't be coming here. This is my place, my private death place. Duke ignored him. Was too busy hunting something down. He was sniffing up the wall of nothing, walking across the ceiling, the trail leading him in spirals into the distance. Nathan huffed nothing air with his nothing mouth. Well, I guess this is it. He huffed again. Nathan didn't want to admit it, but there was already that niggling feeling in his nothing mind, somewhere at the back, a little seed of regret. Perhaps he had made a mistake.
But there were so many reasons, he thought.
Were there? Nathan said, replying to his own inner thoughts.
Yeah, there was the rain, and the guy who lifted you up, and the car without the brakes, and the pathetic suicide without the old-fashioned cocktail, and the girl who died, came back to life, dumped you, and then died again. There was the doctor with the widening whites, remember?
Sure, I remember.
And then there was the time you peed your pants in school. And the missing mother, and the time you ate an apple and there was a worm in it.
I forgot about that apple.
There were so many reasons.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong, but...
Good, because I'm not. There were so many reasons to be dead.
Okay. Duke was far away now. Nathan could only just make out his tail, swaying with each step. Nathan had never believed in any sort of afterlife. Nothing was what he expected, but it wasn't as peaceful as he thought it would be. He wasn't even sure how long he'd been there by that point, talking to his own mind. Here, without stuff happening, time stretched into never-ending meaninglessness. He sighed. But, he continued, what about the other reasons?
What other reasons?
Inception.
Good movie,
he thought. Great movie, he said.
True.
I mean, any Nolan film, really. And, like, something I'll miss, just after you've brushed your teeth and you drink water straight from the cold tap.
Mmm, so refreshing.
It really is. And how about when you wake up an hour before your alarm goes off for work?
That's a good one.
Uh-huh. And you get to snuggle back into your covers. It's like you found another hour of sleep. Oh, and what about that Tom Waits song? What's it called?
Green Grass?
No, that's not right.
What's it called? You're thinking of Green Grass.
No, I think I know what I'm thinking of, and it isn't what you, my inner thoughts, are thinking of. Both of them whistled the melody from Green Grass, somehow out of tune with one another. Okay, yeah, that is it. Together, they chuckled. Okay, how about the first sunny day in spring?
Mate, stop. That's literally one of my favourite things in the world.
When it's been so cold during the winter, and suddenly there's a big yellow disc of warmth in the sky.
And you close your eyes and kind of lean into the warmth.
Heavenly.
Heavenly.
What about Greek yogurt and honey?
Or kicking a football and accidentally hitting somebody in the face.
Making something. Like when you make a cake or something and you have no idea what you're doing. But it comes out way better than you thought it would. And for a little while you think you've found your calling in life.
Resting your head on a girl's shoulder.
Bath time with an excessive amount of bubbles.
Nando's peri peri chicken.
Winnie.
Winnie?
When she was running around that thrash metal gig like a lunatic.
She looked like an idiot.
It was great.
It was.
Also, remember when she was a puppy and she used to follow you wherever you went?
Standing on your feet.
Sitting on your lap.
Biting your socks.
Just being there.
She was always just there.
I loved that she was always there.
Me too.
So many reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nathan and his inner thoughts remained silent for a little while, neither of them saying anything, resynchronizing until there was only him again, and all he could think about was Winnie. From the haze of nothing ahead came a face, walking towards him. It was Duke, barking, jumping, with something in his mouth. A collar, sky blue with a silver tag. Nathan tried to take it from Duke's mouth, but he had no hands. "Well, this won't do," he said. Hang on a sec. With memories of rubbing Winnie's belly and dancing at metal gigs, Nathan remade his right hand. He grabbed hold of the collar with it and pulled. Duke still wouldn't release it though. "Let go, Duke." The Great Dane growled playfully, shook it in his mouth. And so with memories of Christmas mornings spent with his mum and dad, taking their turns to unwrap Christmas presents, drinking Buck's Fizz, listening to Christmas songs, Nathan remade his left hand. He then took the collar with both hands, pulled, but still Duke would not let go. With his two floating alabaster hands, Nathan yanked and yanked.
"Duke, drop it!"
The leather of the collar squeaked. It felt like it might snap. "I'll tell Mum." Duke's ears pricked up and he let go before looking over his shoulder towards the vast sheet of nothing on the horizon. Nathan ran the collar through his fingers. It was so small, Winnie's collar. He'd bought it for her when she was only a year old or so, and she'd never changed it. The sky blue paint, or dye, or whatever they used to colour it, had mostly come away, left scores of dirt brown. And the engraving on the silver tag was mostly gone too, worn away over the years, tarnished and finger smudged. But Nathan didn't have to read it. He knew what it said. On the one side, it had his house address. Not the apartment, but his parents' house. 23 Lum Lane, Nottinghamshire. NG19, 9DD. And on the other side, in smudged letters, it read, "If lost, please return home." "Where did you even find this?" Nathan said. Duke barked before suddenly grabbing the collar from his hand and pulling at it again. Nathan held tight. If he was only allowed this one thing in his nothing, he refused to let it go. Duke was strong, though. He pulled, and Nathan felt his entire nothingness pulled with it. "No, Duke! Stop it!" Duke pulled again. He jerked and yanked, seized and wrenched. He pulled so hard that Nathan and the entire void around him shook.
"Duke!"
The blanket of nothing tumbled away like a curtain. It rippled and collapsed, and all Nathan could do was grip as tight as he could. But it wasn't a collar anymore, but a person's hand, warm and strong. Another hand took him by the shoulder, and together they lifted him from the car seat. Where there was nothing, There was now the night sky, the rain clouds gone, the moon huge and blinking. No, not the moon, a torchlight, blinking on and off in each of his eyes. "Can you tell me your name?" a voice said. "Can you hear me?" He was coughing, painfully, trying to respond to the voice. "Nathan," he managed, struggling to get his tongue moving. The man in the reflective yellow coat with the torch moved his ear to Nathan's lips. "Nathan," he said again. "Nice to meet you. You're going to be okay, Nathan. I promise." Another person in a yellow coat appeared, and together they helped him over the overgrowth, wrapped him up in what looked like kitchen foil, and laid him down on a gurney. "What time is it?" Nathan tried to say, but he couldn't quite manage it. It felt early, though, much earlier than he'd ever woken before in his life, like he'd woken up an hour before his alarm clock, but more than that, more like 2 hours. Nobody replied to him. They simply carried him on the gurney towards the ambulance. "Cool," Nathan thought, settling into some extra sleep before work. Some time later, like maybe 2 or 3 days? Not sure, bit of a blur, to be honest. Nathan hadn't vomited for over 6 hours. The migraines that made his brain throb, made him feel like he was being poked by a million judging fingers from all directions, made him smell the colours of burning theatre cushions, hear distant mating calls of interdimensional spirit animals, taste forgotten memories, and made his ears all tingly, had dimmed somewhat, leaving only the odd bit of temporary blindness when he stood up too fast and the near constant coughing up of phlegm with black bits in it. He was in a hospital bed. There was a curtain drawn around him, but he wasn't alone. There were people in pain on the other side, sobbing, crying, some of them watching TV, some loudly reading magazines, some playing games on their phones. Occasionally, Nathan would see shadow puppets limp by. And there was a doctor stood next to him. This doctor had told Nathan several times that he'd only suffered minor poisoning. "Are you sure it's minor? It feels major," Nathan said.
"Not minor poisoning. Minor poisoning. You inhaled a bunch of toxic fumes similar to what early miners might have done back in the day."
"Oh,
in the mines."
The doctor who'd been treating him had a lollipop in his mouth. He twirled it between finger and thumb between each sentence, stopping occasionally to lick his lips with his blueberry-stained tongue.
"Though," he said, "it might well have been a major minor incident if you'd used something more effective than a hosepipe."
"Lucky me.
To be honest, I think that extra strength lager did more damage."
"You're not kidding."
"No, I'm not.
I think it permanently damaged my taste buds," Nathan said.
"I can test for that."
"Can you?" The doctor reached into his pocket and pulled out a handful of lollipops of various flavours.
"Here."
Nathan took the cherry one, opened it, put it in his mouth and said, "Yep, I can't taste a thing."
"Oh well, taste is mostly in the mind anyway."
"Is it?
Who knows? But I think it'll probably come back with time."
"I hope so." The doctor placed his lollipop sticky hand on Nathan's shoulder.
"Don't be sad. I do a great impression of a man wearing a hat. Want to see it?"
I'm not really in the mood."
"It might cheer you up."
"I'm okay, thanks." The doctor left the room, Trilby hat in hand, but not before prescribing Nathan a series of painkillers and diarrhea tablets and anti-inflammatories and a regular supply of lollipops. After the doctor was done with him, there was an exit interview with a small group of nurses. A short bumpy one, a skinny long one, and the middle-sized one with one eye and a mole on the end of her nose. The three of them all agreed that Nathan wasn't going to try to kill himself again on account of him saying he wouldn't, and pinky swearing.
"If you break this pinky swear,"
said the skinny long one, her skinny and long pinky finger coiled tightly around Nathan's like a snake, giving another snake a terrifically painful hug.
"Then we'll kill you,"
said the short, bumpy one, and the one-eyed one snorted and chuckled and wiped the saliva from her chin.
"If I try to kill myself again, then you will kill me," Nathan said.
The one-eyed nurse put her face to Nathan's, her mole pushing up against the end of his nose. For a moment, it was difficult to see who the mole belonged to.
That's right, she said. Were we not clear?
No, no, it's all right, Nathan said. It's a deal. And that was about it. The nurses let him go, sending him out into the world with the remainders of his cash suit and a plastic carrier bag, wearing nothing but a hospital gown with no hospital trousers and no hospital shoes. It was a chilly walk back to Nathan's apartment, which was completely empty. Well, not empty, but without Winnie it was as good as. Nathan could barely remember how he'd survived for so long without her. He had a little cry, then a big one, and one more little one. The sides hadn't been wiped, the floors hadn't been hoovered, the milk had been left out. Soib had not been back since taking the briefcase of cash. You're fired, Nathan said to the empty apartment, for stealing company property. As he said this, he still kind of missed Soib. She didn't speak much, but she was a nice presence, always had the aroma of bath bombs, always hummed as she worked, occasionally talked about some new true crime podcast. Only once did she rob him. Some people deserve second chances, he mused. Nathan wasted little time before changing into some warmer clothes and heading back outside and starting his search for Winnie. He searched the car park, the streets and the fields. He even bit back his pride and returned to the office. The receptionist, Davy Gage, told him he didn't know who he was. I worked here for years, Davy. Davy shrugged, added, in any case, I've not seen any dogs. Leaving the office, Nathan thought to call in his favour with a stray businessman in the tunnel.
What kind of dog is she?
The leader of the strays said, not before booping his nose. You met her, she was the border collie, the telepathic one.
Righto. One of our technicians will log a ticket and we'll be back in touch with you shortly with the next steps,
the leader said, booping Nathan's nose again. Nathan also asked Cran and his bandmates if they'd seen Winnie, but they said they don't think they'll ever see anyone or anything as rocking as her ever again before handing him a flyer. This time it wasn't for an upcoming gig. It said, venue needed for thrashing rocking bands that will make you shit bricks.
Anywhere will do, dude, Cran added. Even like a burnt-down, converted school bus or something.
I'll let you know if I can think of anything.
And we'll let you know about your awesome bitch.
Thanks, Cran.
Okay, brother.
Cran did the devil horns like Nathan did, a finger on each hand, and went back to flyering. Nathan returned to the corner shop where he'd originally bought the crisps, and then he tried the off-license where he'd bought the tools and the extra-strength lager. He walked the streets, called the local kennels, went to the photocopier place and paid for a handful of posters, paid with more torn pieces of his cash jacket, which was now threadbare. And after sticking them up around town, he went home. Wheezing in his empty apartment, Nathan found Soib's box of cleaning supplies, and cleaned. He washed the pots with hot soapy water, dried them, and put them away. For a while he let his hands soak in the water, spent a while cleaning the dirt from under his fingernails. After his fingers wrinkled up, he wiped down the worktops and the tabletops, hoovered the sofa and cushions and swept the kitchen and living room floors. He took out the rubbish, cleaned the toilet, dusted the welcome mat, and he took the carpet stain remover and scrubbed away the stain on the stairs. His reason number one. But the stain didn't come out. It spread. Nathan took the last full note from what was left of his cash jacket and placed it on top of the step. It didn't really do much to hide the stain, but Nathan believed that with cleaning, similar to gift buying, it was the thought that counts. Once done, he headed to the bedroom and cleaned up there too. He changed the bed covers, which he wasn't sure he could do by himself, but after only 54 minutes, he accomplished it. He opened Winnie's drawer and fished through the luxury squeaky toys and collars and collection of balls and leads that he'd bought for her. She hadn't cared about most of it. She had only wanted to be around Nathan. He rearranged the drawer, thinking she'd appreciate it when he found her. If I find her. Nathan closed the drawer. In the kitchen, he opened the fridge. He went to reach for the bacon and the eggs, but he stopped himself. Instead, he reached past the bacon, past the eggs, deeper into the fridge than he had in months, past the mouldy yogurt, the butter, the cheddar cheese, and past the half-eaten packet of deli meats. And he reached and reached until he found the blockery florin. He pulled it out, held it in front of his face. It looked like a tiny dead oak tree, its leaves dried and shriveled, its trunk curled into itself. It smelled of shoe polish and compost. Nathan shrugged before biting into it. It was like leather, had the texture of forgotten jerky, and it took a surprising amount of effort to bite through its mouldy bark. Even with the deadened taste buds, he could taste the bitter sourness of the juices seeping out as the hardened exterior of the broccoli cracked. He gnawed on the fibrous rotten vegetable and washed it down with a cup of tap water. "Yum," he said, lied, wiped away the tears. Afterwards, he lay on the sofa for a few minutes before putting on his non-cash coat and heading back outside to search again. It was this time, leaving the apartment, that he thought to look where he had last seen Winnie, which was in the rearview mirror of his car. There it was, the collar. He could see it from all the way up the road. It was the one that Winnie had worn around her neck for years, the same one that Duke found in his dreams and in Nathan's death. It sat on a pebble patch next to a pile of cigarette butts and an abandoned condom. Nathan didn't even look at the tag on the collar, just ran his fingers over the cold metal, read it like it was braille. "If lost, please return home," the collar said. "Okay," Nathan said. "You win, Win." As the day came to a close, Nathan put the collar in his coat pocket and made his way to the place he had not been in over a decade, his mum and dad's house. At one point in time, the house at number 23 on Lum Lane barely contained the many dogs within. There had been so many of them, stretching the house to its breaking point, constantly moving, shifting, barking, playing, chewing. They were so alive, and as such, so was the house. But now it was silent. The dogs only remained in what they'd left behind, in the smudges on the windows from their wet noses and muddy paws, in the gnawed toys and chewed bones left to the overgrown grass. But the evidence only highlighted how empty the house had become. And spooky, too. "It really is quite spooky," Nathan thought, resisting the urge to turn back. He was a trespasser here. This was not his home anymore. At least it didn't feel like it. He opened the gate. The hinges groaned before swinging shut behind him, the latch locking with an automatic click. The house appeared to be shrinking in its old age. It now arched slightly over, the whole thing leaning, trying to get a better look at Nathan, as if trying to recognize him, its bedroom windows like thick square-rimmed glasses. It also appeared to be twisting in its foundations, the right side windows further up than the left side windows, the short fat chimney doing its best to coil up like a pig's tail. The front door was locked, and so Nathan cupped his hands and pressed his face to the frosted glass. He could just make out the build-up of unanswered letters carpeting the hallway. The air stirred memories of the unmistakable odour of wet fur and dog breath. It was thick, slightly overbearing, wringing out his lungs like damp flannels. He coughed as he made his way around the house, running his fingers across the bricks, the fences, the windows, over paw prints set in cement. A toy in the shape of a cartoon chicken squawked underfoot as he stepped into the long back garden. The back door was also locked, but there at the bottom of the garden was the doghouse, the wood panels now covered in green moss and the roof scattered with rotten apples fallen from the tree behind it. Yellow light drew a square around the door, and there was a slight din of game show noise. Maybe Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Dad's favourite, Nathan thought. The sound of a man calling a contestant a pillock for not knowing a correct answer travelled up the length of the garden, quickened Nathan's pulse. He paced over the patio stones leading through the absurdly overgrown garden to the doghouse door. Rusty garden tools leant against the damp, mildewed wood of the doghouse wall. "You arse." The Battle of the Bulge started on the 20th of December, 1944, and it was also known as the Ardennes Counter-Offensive. Thank you very much. It was Nathan's father's voice. It was the same, but different. The man Nathan used to know, but not really.
"The answer, of course, the 16th of December 1944,
said the man on the TV, chuckling.
A bit of an easy one, I guess. Once again, the 16th, not the 14th. The 16th.
Yeah, got that one, Nathan's dad replied. The tinny TV host laughed, and then so did the audience, and then so did Nathan's dad. Nathan ran his finger across the chalk sign on the door, from the D to the E, coating his fingertip in white and yellow dust.
Right, now it's time for the hardest question of the night. Are you ready?
The audience whooped. Yes, Nathan's dad replied.
Who was the president of...
Nathan knocked.
Cambodia during the...
He knocked again. Hello, he said, trying to sound manly but sounding more like a basketball shoe skid. He coughed. It's me, Dad. It's Nathan.
19-8.
The TV clicked off. A moment passed. Something moved inside. Wood panels creaked. Footsteps. The door unlocked. A second lock. A third. Then it opened. The yellow light outlined an old man with big ears and an even bigger nose, and he was so, so very small. And was this the same man who used to lift Nathan onto his shoulders? Was this the colossal man from Nathan's childhood? The man with the shoe brush nose hair and silver back hair? The man who taught Nathan how to tie his shoelaces, how to pour cereal into a bowl, how to lose a wife? The man leaned forward, his features revealed in the moon grey light.
Hey, Upson.
Yes. It was that man. His smile was ridiculous. Dust shook loose with each movement. Nathan went to say something, but no words came.
Well, you coming in or what? Freezing my nipples off out of here.
Nathan's dad pulled Nathan into the light, into the overbearing warmth of the doghouse.
Welcome to my, my bachelor pad, I guess is what it is, his dad said.
From the outside, the doghouse seemed so small, barely large enough to fit a handful of dogs and a few dog beds. But inside it was vast, appeared to get bigger the more Nathan's eyes adjusted. His dad had packed in so much. He'd moved in a sofa bed, a TV cabinet with an old-fashioned CRT television, a mini fridge, a trunk for his clothes, a small bookshelf full of Guinness Books of World Records, two standing lamps, a kettle and teapot, a biscuit tin, a bench press, a tiny liquor cabinet with travel-sized bottles of alcohol, mostly whiskies. There were posters of different Formula One drivers on the walls, a reading chair with a second, smaller bookshelf full of Ernest Hemingway novels, and a heater that was blowing sauna hot air into Nathan's face.
What?
Was all that Nathan could say, looking left to right.
What?
His dad grabbed an open pack of cigarettes from the side and jammed them into his dressing gown pocket.
You didn't see nothing, he said. You smoke? Don't tell your mother.
Okay, I won't. Won't what? His dad winked, did a cheeky laugh. Nathan smiled. He stepped deeper into the doghouse.
Look at all this. You've been here all this time. It's so big. You've got everything in here. The only thing missing is the dogs.
Nathan's dad filled up the kettle from a dusty bottle of water. He grabbed two uneven mugs with chipped rims and cartoon racing cars on the sides and placed a tea bag in each.
Yeah, my man cave, you could say. It's pretty radical, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but why don't you go back into the house?
Your mother wouldn't want that. She needs a space.
But it's been like, I don't know, 12 years or something?
12 years a slave. Did you see that one?
No.
Me neither. I hear it's a good film, though. Won some of them awards. We should watch it sometime.
His dad poured the boiling water, stirred. Nathan wandered deeper into the kennels, saw where the yellow of the lamplight ended, but not the doghouse. He wondered if the doghouse even had an end. His dad poured in the milk, stirred, handed Nathan a mug, more dust crumbling from the folds of his skin as he moved.
Do you miss her, Dad?
He cocked his ear.
Who's that?
Mum.
Oh, your mother.
Yeah, of course I do, but
I'm here whenever she's ready to make a go of things.
My balls are in her court, you could say. Do you know where she is? Nathan touched the ceiling. Flakes of dust snowed down. He ran his finger over the mug rim, found more dust.
What do you mean?
His dad said.
She's in the house, isn't she?
He coughed again. A plume of dust billowed out from his open mouth and hung in the air. Moaning, he sat back down on his camping chair.
his knees and back cracking and popping like frying bacon as he placed his feet on a stool, pulled a tartan quilt over his legs. He unveiled a second space heater on the table and switched it on, aimed it on his face. His wheat dry hair shivered. There were no second chairs, so Nathan sat on the mini fridge, said, "I don't think so, Dad." "Nipped it shops then, I bet." No, doggy training class. She'd been on about starting that for ages now. "When did you see her last?" His dad appeared to ponder. His eyes dilated, his mouth slackened. "Dad? Dad, you okay?" His face remained blank, saliva gathered at the corner of his mouth. "Dad, what?" his dad said, eyes returning to normal. "Are you okay?" "Oh, yes, yeah." "Why? You went somewhere then?" "No, I didn't. I haven't been anywhere in..." His vision drifted again. The saliva drooled, connected mouth to chest. Nathan sipped from the tea, felt the dust particles on his tongue, waited for his dad to return. "Dad? Huh? Huh? What is it?" "I'm looking for my dog." "Can't shit without hitting a dog around here, Nate. You know that. Just look." His dad pointed towards the door, towards the house. "Not Mum's dogs. I'm looking for my dog. I'm looking for Winnie." "No dogs allowed in here, son. My house, my rules. Nope, no dogs allowed in the doghouse." His face became absent again. His eyes wrinkled shut. The bones in his hands appeared to shrink around the steaming mug, the skin growing slack, the body mass in his dressing gown disappearing like he was being sucked dry by an unseen straw. "He won't be here forever," Nathan thought. "Remember," his dad said, looking at the blank TV. "My house, my rules. I said that to you a while back. Or maybe you said it to me. I get confused." Nathan looked at his father in a convex reflection. "Dad, have you seen Winnie? Have you seen anyone? Where is Mum?" "She's in the house, Nate." His dad's eyes shut once more as he pulled the tartan quilt further up, sinking into it. He opened his eyes long enough to place the mug on the floor, turned on the TV, then closed his eyes again.
"And welcome back to Who Would Like to Be a Gabillionaire?"
said the man on the TV. Nathan leaned over and gently rocked his dad's shoulder. He felt like a bag of kindling, eyes only partly opening. A crescent slice of grey and bloodshot skin peered through. Even his eyes seemed smaller now, like the eyeballs were shrinking in the sockets. "Hey, Upson," Nathan's dad said. "Mum's in the house, yeah? Is that right, Dad?" His dad placed his half-sized hands in Nathan's. "Nothing is right at this time, Nate. Only sleep is correct."
"Is that your final answer?"
said the TV. Nathan kissed his dad on the forehead, dusting his lips. "I love you, Dad. I'm sorry I haven't been around." Nathan finished his tea and placed both mugs on the side. There, over on the bookshelf, was his dad's ring of keys. "You could have gone back inside any time you wanted," Nathan said to the top of his father's head, poking over the back of the chair.
"Are you sure that's your final answer?"
said the TV. Nathan picked up the keys and left the doghouse, closing the door behind him, left his dad to his sleep. He walked back to the house, unlocked it, and stepped inside. It was haunted, the house, surely. It certainly felt that way as Nathan stepped inside. Something whispered to the back of his neck. A phantom sniffed his butthole. A presence gave him an invisible wet willy. Nathan shivered. He kicked the mountain of unopened letters out of the way as he quick-stepped into the hallway. There were some addressed to him, but he didn't care to open them, just kicked those further than the others. He tried the light. No electricity. Wind whistled through the open doors, up the stairs and back again. Unseen things moved. Something shuffled. It smelled of something dead. No, not something dead. Something dog. In the living room he saw where his mum used to lay and nap on chillier days. The fireplace now cold, chunks of ash scattering the muddied shag carpet. The sofa cushions lay in pieces on the floor. In the kitchen he saw where she'd gotten trapped in her jacket and the many hundreds of dog bowls, licked clean, now patinated and rusty. and in the bathroom he saw where his mum used to clean her teeth, gargle on mouthwash, sing Beatles songs. The toilet bowl empty, drained from an army of dogs drinking it dry, and the master bedroom, feathers strewn, curtains ripped, furniture riddled with teeth marks, only a few shreds of the wicker laundry basket remained. And then Nathan stepped into his own bedroom, and it remained unchanged from the day he left, like he'd only stepped out a moment ago and stepped right back in. Well, apart from the mountains of cash that was, years of build-up, short dunes of money tumbling over itself, disturbed by Nathan's entrance. The cash piled up and covered his bed, his bedside table, and was now halfway up his wardrobe. Only half the bedroom windows weren't covered. Yes, apart from the mountains upon mountains of cash, the bedroom was practically the same. "I can't look after the both of us," Nathan had told Winnie when he left over a decade ago, rucksack on his shoulder, briefcase in his hand, both packed to the bursting with rolled up cloves, peanut butter, oat biscuits, a Game Boy with a cracked screen, some packs of orange sherbet, and a multi-pack of Mars bars. "Don't worry though, when I get myself sorted, I'll come back for you, Win. I promise. We're really doing it. We're really going to do it." Nathan wondered what happened to that rucksack and what Winnie did for all those years in this bedroom. Mostly shitting cash, it seemed. Nathan scooped away the cash by the handful, found his way to his bedside table, saw the photos of him and his mum and dad on holiday in Mallorca. He dug down to the unmade bed, under a million or so pounds worth of cash, maybe a billion, who knows. He found his old X-Men bed covers, the little yellow-uniformed Wolverine, and the blue-uniformed Cyclops, and the white-uniformed Storm from his childhood, and Professor X in his floating yellow chair. Nathan wheezed, coughed, shivered. Still in his coat, he climbed into bed. Outside it was dark. The moon was there, humming a wolf lullaby but not for Nathan. Wolf songs were for the loyal, for the pack. Nathan didn't know what time it was. He didn't care. He just missed his dog. He cried a little as he closed his eyes, fell asleep, and dreamed of Winnie! Although, no he didn't, because he wasn't asleep. His eyes were closed but he was awake, confused about where he was and how old he was. "Am I 12 again?" he said.
"No,"
Winnie replied, whispering telepathically. Nathan rubbed the crust from his eyelashes, opened his eyes to the grey-blue skies lighting up the room, to the sound of early birds eating worms, to Winnie sitting by the bed, the same place she'd first crawled out all those years ago. "Winnie?" Nathan sat up. She was nervous, looked like she'd been caught digging in the garden.
"It's going to be okay,"
she said, her snout down, eyes barely making contact with his, tail tucked between her legs. Nathan climbed out of the bed, slipped to the floor, reaching out to her paw.
"I'm so sorry I never came back, but I'm here now. I'm here to get you."
She gave him a motherly lick, and he pressed his forehead to hers.
"Are you okay? Did you come here after I drove away?
I'm so sorry for leaving you like that. I'm much better now. I'm much better. Well, I mean, I have some minor poisoning. But other than that, I'm actually feeling much better in the sense that I don't think I'm going to kill myself. Not soon, anyway. Who knows about the future? But for now, I..." She pulled away. "Winnie?
What's the matter?"
She whined, spun on the spot, sat down, spun again.
"Not good."
"What isn't?"
"Them. The people. Your mother."
Winnie scratched her ear, shook again.
"Inside."
She shook herself dry even though she wasn't wet. "Winnie, what the hell is the matter?"
"They've gone to get your mother. Two of them. The dog people. They're inside."
"Inside where?" Winnie did that thing that dogs do when they've got worms and they rub their butt on the floor. "When?"
"Inside me."
She arched herself around, pointed her anus towards Nathan.
"Inside my butt."
Nathan said nothing. He took a moment, he sat up, coughed some more, stretched, yawned, cracked his knuckles, then his jaw, and finally refocused. "I beg your pardon," he said. Winnie itched her butt again, then pointed it back at Nathan.
"I'll explain on the way. Get in."
Now she wiggled her butt as if to focus Nathan's attention.
"Come on, what are you waiting for?"
"Wait a second, I'm not sure about that. I think think I read somewhere that a dog owner should never do that. That and never feed a dog raisins.
Nathan, now is not the time to be careful. Now is the time to be a rock star. Get in my butt.
Winnie, I won't fit.
If you ever want to see your mum again, you've got to get in.
Nathan leaned closer. The bed creaked. My mum is in your anus.
Yes, and the two bad men are going to get her. And they were so mad, evil, broken. I think they might kill her.
Nathan looked at Winnie's butthole in a fresh light, mainly because the sun was rising, beaming in through the window. The anus widened. The air around it shimmered like heat on a horizon, like a gas leak. This is where the cash comes from.
And your mum.
Right, but how will I fit?
Don't worry about that.
How can I not worry about that?
Nathan, you're wasting time. I can feel them moving inside me, travelling upwards.
Nathan cautiously crawled towards the anus. Will I know where to go?
To be honest, there's only one way to go.
Of course, of course.
Plus, don't worry, I'll meet you in there.
Nathan nodded.
You will go.
Win. I will. I will. Nathan barely had time to take a breath before Winnie thrust her butthole towards his nose. He screamed before it muffled him. It was like being kidnapped. Unseen hands thrusting hood over his face. The folds of dog butt wrapped around him, enveloped his head, slipped over his ears and cut the sound from the bedroom. There was no birdsong in there. The flesh pulled him deeper, enveloped his shoulders, and swallowed him. Inside there were dark shades of undulating red, white strings moving over his eyes, and then a sucking pop as he made it through to the other side, landing on the soft, fleshy floor. Still too dark to see anything, Nathan carefully stood, felt his way forward using the anal cavity walls to hold himself steady. The floor was slick, the walls were gooey. Nathan had to dig his heels into the sides to not slip over. It was hard work. Sweat pearled on his forehead. He worked deeper in, deeper still, towards a warm glow of light ahead. At first he believed he was going backwards, back towards the daylight, but he saw the light was coming from fairy lights, a single line of them on the floor, leading deeper into the tunnels like dropped, glistening breadcrumbs. Nathan followed the lights and found more and more of them. They covered the tunnel walls now, some blinking, some flashing, some with broken bulbs. "Hello," Nathan said, his voice echoing through the chamber. The walls groaned, sounded a little like whale song.
"What do you think?"
"It's quite pretty, actually. Wait, when?"
"I told you I'd meet you inside."
Nathan turned to see Winnie's head was by his leg. He saw the front paws, the torso, and then more torso. Her middle bit stretched and disappeared into the gloom behind. She was like that snake that eats its own tail, but the other way around.
"You never cease to amaze me, Winnie."
He patted her on the head. Somewhere there was a tail wagging.
"What now?"
he said. The fairy lights reflected in Winnie's dark caramel-coloured eyes.
"We go on."
Nathan looked ahead at the never-ending colon tunnel.
"Okay then, let's go."
They went on.
You've been listening to My Dog Shits Cash, written and narrated by me, Luke Condor, with music by myself, as to Corondo, Chris Zabriskie, Ben Duncan, and End Arch Rival. Sound effects were provided by freesound.org and zapsplat.com. For more of my work, head over to lukecondor.com, that's Condor with a K. Be sure to leave a review, tell your friends, and look after your mind and your pets. Until next time. Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.